Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
A convention of states. We're beginning to hear a lot of talk about a new constitutional convention. Conservatives are coming down on both sides of the issue. Some are afraid of a runaway convention, where the liberals will take over and completely rewrite our constitution into something we would not recognize. Others are saying this is the most effective and timely way in which to take back our country. My guest today is Steve Davies. He is the Convention of States Pennsylvania Director. Thanks, Steve, for being with us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You know, this is becoming a hot button issue. We hear more and more about it, and I think people are beginning to weigh. It's similar to Common Core. You know, a couple years ago, no one knew about Common Core, and now I think the same thing with the Convention of the States. More and more people, a couple years ago, didn't know about it, but more people are becoming aware of the possibility of a Convention of the States, and they are hearing, you know, pros and cons both ways. And we increasingly see a federal government that's bloated, corrupt, reckless, and invasive. And most people don't recognize that there is a constitutional option, which is the Convention of States. Give us, what is a Convention of States? We'll just start with a basic question. What is it?
Yes, there is a growing recognition of a lot of problems with the federal government across the U.S. It's really not a partisan issue. At least that's our view of it. We have abuses by the federal government, irrespective of which party's in control of Congress, the White House, et cetera. If you look at Article 5 of the Constitution, and many people, you know, haven't read the Constitution in detail, or it's been a long time since they have, there's Article 5 talks about how you can amend, or what the process is for amending the U.S. Constitution. And it sets up two mechanisms for that to happen. The first, and the one that is the most common, the one that we have used to get all 27 of the amendments that we currently have, is where Congress debates amendment language, and if they can agree, if both houses can agree by a two-thirds majority vote on specific amendment language, they would report it, vote it out of Congress, and then it would go to the states for ratification. The state legislatures would take it up, and if at least three-quarters of the states vote to ratify the amendment language, then it becomes an amendment to the Constitution. That's the first process, and the one that is the most common, the one that we're all mostly familiar with. There's another avenue, though, to amend the Constitution, and this is where at least two-thirds of the states call on Congress to convene a convention. And in Article 5, it says that Congress shall call a convention upon the application of at least two-thirds of the states for either a particular amendment or for an amendment topic. Now, it doesn't get that explicit in the Constitution, but that's the intent of it. Mm-hmm. So if assuming the 34 states, in the case today, it would be 34 states apply for a convention for a particular topic, and over the last 20 years there's been a lot of discussion, for example, around a balanced budget amendment.
Right.
In fact, the count right now for states that have filed for a balanced budget amendment is around 23, 24, something like that.
Right. In fact, it's talking Congress right now about a balanced budget amendment.
Correct. So if 34 states, you know, apply for this convention, then Congress is obligated to call it. The only role Congress has in a convention is to set the time and place, and then also Congress has the ability to specify if the convention reports out amendment language, proposed amendment language for ratification. Congress has the ability to specify if the ratification will be by vote of the state legislature or by state conventions. Other than those sort of ministerial responsibilities, Congress has no involvement in the convention itself. The states would determine their own delegations. They would send delegations to the convention, and the convention, once it's assembled, sets its own rules for officers and committee structures and when they're going to convene and when they're going to adjourn and that sort of thing. The background on conventions like this, during the founding era, this was commonly the way the states got together to resolve issues. And so when the framers wrote the Constitution, they had a very specific process in mind for what a convention meant and how a convention is intended to operate. We have historical record. We have, obviously, the Federalist Papers and other documentation of these founding-era conventions, and we clearly, I think, understand what the framers' intent is for these things. And so that is what Convention of States is all about. We want to have 34 state legislatures adopt resolutions calling on Congress to convene a convention. and we have certain topics we think need to be addressed, not specific language. And so that's what this effort is about. I lead the effort in Pennsylvania, and it's we have similar organizations in place across almost all 50 states at this point.
So if I understand you right, the only role Congress would have is they would specify how the vote would take place. Is that what I?
That's correct. Congress, per the Article 5 language, calls the convention, which means they pick a time and place, and then they also have the ability to set the ratification mode. So you'd have 38 states to ratify either by a vote of the state legislature or by state conventions, and Congress is the one that determines which way it's going to go.
Okay, so that would, I got you, okay. Right. So they would call the convention, then they would determine how the vote would actually take place.
That's correct.
Okay.
For example, in some cases, there's been a requirement by Congress that that conventions actually ratify a proposed amendment. It's been rare, but the logic around that apparently is that in some cases there's a feeling that it needs to be the actual vote of the people as opposed to their representatives in the legislature. So that's why the framers gave us that option.
The option, yeah. And just curious, because here, of course, it's not amending the Pennsylvania Constitution, because it's a long, drawn-out process to amend the Pennsylvania Constitution, but that would not be the same rules, so to speak, as our participation in amending a new constitutional amendments to the U.S. Constitution, a whole different ballgame.
Right, that's right,
and
it will be potentially a fairly protracted process, or could be. Obviously, Convention of States effort kicked off in mid-2013, so we've been going on for about 18 months.
Yeah,
we're hoping to get the 34 state threshold crossed before the end of this year, and have a convention as early as mid-2016. Now, that's optimistic, and I think there's every chance it would slip a year. And then let's assume we have a convention in 2017, and the convention does actually succeed in reporting out a proposed amendment. It would then need to go to the states, obviously, for ratification, and it may take several years to get 38 states to ratify. So, you know, from start to finish, you're probably looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 or 7 years to get this done.
We expected yesterday.
Yeah,
we live in that type of a world where we expect things to happen instantaneously. So I think one of the main things will be keeping people focused, keep their interest up.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that there's a couple of things that'll become apparent once the state count starts to go up relative to these applications. One, I suspect that there's going to be litigation around most aspects of any convention. You mentioned in the opening that there are many out there that oppose a convention because of a fear that the scope and the outcome, if you will, of the convention can't really be controlled. So I think there'll be folks that are going to want to challenge it around that. The topics that we propose for a convention to discuss, they're specific, but they're broad enough to allow a fair amount of debate amongst the delegates as to what the exact amendment language needs to look like. And there are others that feel like, no, that's too dangerous, or that's not appropriate. There needs to be specific amendment language
and stick with that. Just
convention.
Okay,
right.
And not leave it open to debate. That like this is the language we want.
Exactly.
We'll vote yes or no. Okay.
Yeah, and many feel that's the way it ought to happen. We would disagree with that. For example, if you had specific amendment language around, say, a balanced budget amendment or term limits. And term limits is a good one because some have proposed a specific number of years for the maximum number of years a person could serve in Congress. Well, if you get into a convention and somebody has a better idea that rather than just being a flat, say, 12 years, let's do it like this, well, that's great. However, if the convention was called based on the original language, then arguably you could have a situation where the convention is not sticking with their charter, if you will, and just debating and voting up or down on the original language. So we think the convention delegates ought to have the ability to debate and enhance and improve and come to some consensus on what the best way to go is. So there'll be the litigation issue. And again, as a practical matter, there's going to be other things that are going to make a convention something that it's going to take a lot of effort to bring about. I do think that there'll be a fair amount of resistance, frankly, once we get to the upper 20s, over 30 in terms of state count. The federal government and both major parties, the media and lobbyists, everybody who has a vested interest in the system, the way it operates right now, is going to come to actively resist any attempt to have a convention. So I think that once this thing gets into the national consciousness in a material way, that being something where you've got mainstream media taking note of the number of states that have filed for applications, then I understand we are all a society of instant gratification.
Right.
But I do think there'll be a recognition that there's this major process underway, and kind of like an election cycle, it's going to take a while to work through it.
Right. And I know there's been fear expressed by some that there are also liberals such as George Soros, who is also calling for a constitutional a convention of states. But there would be guidelines set down to restrict the topics. Is that what you're saying? There would be some controls to control the convention.
Correct.
There's
a couple of things that work in conjunction with each other to restrict, if you will, the nature of the debate and what can actually be adopted by the convention. The first is the nature of the call for a convention. So, for example, I know that there are many out there on the liberal side of the fence that would say that the Citizens United decision was horrible and there needs to be a constitutional amendment relative to election campaign finance modifications and restrictions, the influence of money in the election process. And so if you get 34 states to agree that, yes, we want to have a convention to discuss campaign finance reform, if 34 states apply for that, then yes, there should be a convention. And once all 50 states presumably send delegations to the convention, if a majority of the delegations report out an amendment to control campaign finance spend, then I think that's fine, and it needs to go then to the states for ratification. And if 38 states will ratify it, then it should be the law of the land. I have no problem with the process. I have no problem with people bringing up whatever idea or issue that they think ought to be addressed. And again, if 34 states are willing to tee it up as a convention topic, then I think we execute the process.
Right,
No problem there. So that's one thing, is the application process. The second thing that's actually going on is a couple of states have already adopted what's called delegate limitation legislation, where they have passed a law that says if you're a delegate to an Article 5 convention, here are going to be the rules of the road relative to what you can and cannot do at a convention. And in fact, if you go out of bounds on this thing, there's the potential for civil and criminal penalties that could be applied to any delegate who doesn't follow the direction of the state legislature. So there's two states that actually have done that, Indiana and Georgia, and I would expect that as we get closer to a convention, ultimately every state is going to want to have something like that in place to make sure that the delegates are following the direction and the wishes of the state legislatures. And then the third thing that's also happening is there's a group of state legislators that are currently meeting under the Assembly of State Legislatures kind of mantle to talk about convention rules of order. They're not discussing topics for a convention. They're actually currently meeting several times a year to talk about, if we were to have a convention, how are we going to actually have the thing operate? So it won't be a free-for-all. There will be rules of the road, if you will. There will be topic limitations. There will be delegate limitations and ties back to what their states have authorized them to do. And all of those things will work in concert to have the appropriate outcome from any convention.
Okay, so there are already steps in place that would control the convention in anticipation that there will be a convention coming up. Because, you know, as the average citizen looks at the federal government and how big it's gotten, how out of control it's gotten, we realize something's got to be done. Because
that's correct.
Yeah, you know, we have a runaway federal government that does not read the Constitution or chooses to just reinterpret the Constitution or totally ignore it. Now, so you're saying that each amendment that is proposed, I guess that's the right word, proposed by this Convention of the States would have to be taken to the state, the 50 states, and 34 of those states would have to accept that amendment for it to be actually a part of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, actually it's 38 states.
For ratification,
it would be the three-quarter threshold. So,
okay, that's three-quarter.
Yeah, the delegates at the convention have no authority. They have no ability to adopt anything as a matter of law. They do have the ability to adopt proposed amendments, but they don't have the ability to say, this is it, we're going to vote it up or down, and if it's voted up out of the convention, then it becomes automatically an amendment to the Constitution. It doesn't work that way. Article 5 is a process for amending the Constitution, not writing a new one or starting over or anything like that. So the delegates would vote up or down on proposed amendment language, for example, on term limits, which could be a very, very short amendment, and then that language would go to the states for ratification. And if 38 states voted for it, then it would become an official legal amendment to the Constitution.
Okay, so the delegates themselves would not vote on, if we had 38 state delegates from 38 states to pass or ratify a constitution in the convention, that doesn't count. The states themselves, is that the state legislatures would have to vote for the amendment?
That's correct.
Okay.
The states in the convention, the way conventions have worked in the past and the way we would expect an Article 5 convention to work is that each state delegation would get one vote. So if Pennsylvania sent, let's say, hypothetically 13 delegates mm-hmm. to the convention, those delegates, our 13 delegates, would have to get together and determine what the state vote would be, either yay or nay, on
okay.
a particular amendment language. And then if a majority of the states, in this case, if we have 50 states at the convention, if 26 state delegations vote out to approve for ratification or to submit for ratification, for example, term limit language, mm-hmm. then that language, assuming the 26 states vote in favor of it, would then go to the state legislatures for ratification votes. Now, remember, Congress has the ability to say, well, we want ratification to be either by vote of state legislature
okay,
or by
right.
state convention.
Okay.
So if Congress says state convention, then you'd have to have all the states hold a convention, and then those conventions would have to vote the amendment language up or down. And if 38 do, then we've got a new amendment.
Okay, but it would not be the delegates to the convention of the states.
That's correct.
Okay.
All they have the ability to do is to propose language. That's
okay.
it. That's the extent of their role.
Okay, okay. Your job is to propose language. And then each state, of the 50 states, you'd have to have 38 states vote yay for that particular language.
Yeah, for it to be become an amendment, they would have to ratify
it.
Now, so it's 34 states to get a convention called. Once the convention is called, then it would take 26 states or a simple majority to adopt language. And then once that language is adopted, it would come out of the convention, and then it would go back to the states, and it would take 38 to ratify for it to become a law. So it's the numbers are 34, then 26, then 38. Those are the numbers.
That's a three-quarter threshold, 38.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
So it's difficult. It will not be easy.
Has there ever been a convention of the states? Has there been something like this since way back in the beginning?
No, there has not. Once the Constitution was ratified by the states in 1788, there was the very first call for an Article 5 convention came from Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we have had over 700 individual applications for an Article 5 convention. And in fact, there were 14 of them, I believe 14, in 2014, either 12 or 14. But the problem is we've never had 34 states all call for a convention for the exact same either amendment language or topic.
Okay, it's been for different things.
While there's been hundreds of them, we haven't gotten to the threshold yet.
Wow. So it is a long, drawn-out process then.
It can be. It very well can be. And, again, on the balanced budget amendment effort, Pennsylvania, for example, adopted an Article 5 resolution for calling for a balanced budget amendment back in 1979.
Wow.
So, it's taken a while to get to the 23. At one point, there were actually more than 23 states, I think the number is 23 now, that had called for a convention for mm-hmm. balanced budget amendment. Several states rescinded their applications, and it kind of set the bean count back.
Yeah.
And so we've been going now almost for 40 years or 35 years trying to get to 34 states for a balanced budget amendment. One of the things that's interesting is when Congress sees this kind of momentum for a particular topic mm-hmm. start to bubble up, they tend to take action around that. And there was, in fact,
some
activity in Congress in the early 90s to pass a law,
right.
pass legislation
yeah.
to balance the budget. It didn't happen. It came close. And I think there's been a lot of frustration, particularly lately, in terms of what's happening with our debt and just, frankly, an inability for the Fed to control what they're doing. And so you're starting to see a lot of interest now, again, in a balanced budget amendment.
Right.
There were four states, I believe, that passed resolutions last year calling for a balanced budget amendment. So, again, it's going to continue to – I think the count will continue to go up. And for Convention of States, while we don't specifically endorse a balanced budget amendment, we do have one of the three topics that we believe a convention needs to discuss is generally what we call fiscal controls
mm-hmm.
on the federal government. And it very well may be that in that dialogue at the convention, the delegates may come up with something that they will call a balanced budget amendment. It may or may not look anything like the proposals that
right.
are out there now, but again, we want to give them the flexibility to to talk about fiscal controls. And so we would agree that, that needs to be a topic.
And that will be interesting because if we get near the 34 states that need to come together to call a convention of the states, like you said earlier, the pressure would be out there to make sure that they don't actually get to 34 because the White House doesn't want something like this to be called. The major parties, Democrat, Republican, don't want this to be called in the media. I mean, there'll be so much pressure, so much name-calling and intimidation in trying to put a halt to this.
I think that's right.
Yeah,
I think the last couple of states, let's say we get up to 31, 32, there's going to be a full-court press, I think, coming out of Washington, D.C. to prevent those last couple of states from adopting their resolutions. And I shudder to think of what the shenanigans will look like.
I know. But hopefully Americans are fed up enough with the federal takeover of our education and, you know, the out-of-control EPA regulations being handed down almost on a daily basis, along with everything else we see. Hopefully that'd be enough, I guess, a citizen uprising in a way to not that it would involve violence, but still to the point where we're saying enough is enough.
That's exactly right. I think, and that's why the framers gave us Article 5. When they were writing the Constitution, they had just come off of an 8.5-year war of independence and a huge amount of fear of a overpowering, federal monarchy type, situation. So they recognized and wrote the Constitution, obviously, to authorize certain powers for the federal government, but it really intended to be a major restriction on what the federal government could do. They recognized that at some point this thing very well could and likely would get out of control, and they wanted Article 5 for the states to be able to, independent of Congress, independent of the federal government, to be able to rein this thing in short of having to go right back to another Declaration of Independence and having to kind of, start all over. So I like to tell people that what's happened to the Constitution is it's been hacked, basically.
That's a good
and
way
we
to
have an opportunity to push a button that says restore original settings.
Yeah,
and that's
like
what
that.
We need to do. We need to restore original settings. I agree and understand that once we do that, the progressives and others that don't honor the Constitution will immediately start trying to undo what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it'll take them another 100 years or more to get this thing messed up the way it is right now.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay, now here's the question. As the Constitution is now, we see a lot of stuff going on that's not in the Constitution. If there are amendments added to the Constitution through this lengthy process, will those in power honor those amendments, those changes to the Constitution? Of course, you can't predict the future, but what's your gut feeling? We'll wait and see.
Can you ask me again? I missed part of that.
We see the Constitution as it's written, as the Founding Fathers wrote it.
Correct.
And we have historical information, such as Federalist Papers, letting us know what the intent of the various, the language of the Constitution, what the original intent was. If we're able to get through this process and add these amendments to the Constitution, do you think that politicians and those in power in D.C. will honor those new amendments, new parts of the Constitution, any more than what they honor the Constitution as it is now?
That's a great question, and we, in the Convention of States could ask that a fair amount. One of the things that's really happened is that we've evolved to a point where there's really two constitutions. There's the one that the framers originally gave us, and then there's the one that we're operating under, which is something that's been interpreted by the Supreme Court, and in many cases, I would agree, it's been ignored, particularly here lately, at least by the executive branch. The Congress has ceded a lot of their power and authority to the executive branch, and it's an untenable situation. So I would say that while we're not happy with what's going on in Washington, D.C., and as a result of a lot of interpretation and other things that have been done to it by the Supreme Court and others, there is a Constitution that's generally being followed. It's just not the one the framers wanted us to have.
Right.
So I think that when you go through a process of a state convention, a couple of things are going to happen. Number one, there's going to be an intense amount of grassroots across the nation support for whatever the convention is going to be called to discuss. If it takes 34 states to get it there, obviously there's a lot of upset people and a lot of legislatures that are willing to take this thing on. So I think that's going to make it very difficult for those at the national level to say, well, this is not something that we need to be paying any attention to. So that's one. Two, I think that there will be litigation over whatever the convention does or doesn't do that will be filed, and we'll have to work through depending on what the language looks like. And then the other thing is, I think the language, I think what will come out will be very crisp. It will be very explicit on what the intent is, what the amendment is intended to accomplish and to address. I think it'll be very, very difficult for there to be any wiggle room around these things. When the convention, the original convention, the Philadelphia Convention, adopted the Constitution, they had the benefit of roughly 6 years under the Articles of Confederation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We have the benefit of about 230 That's years true. Under the Constitution. We can look back and very clearly see what was not strongly enough worded originally,
right.
and we can fix all that.
Okay.
So, again, I think it's a great opportunity. It'll be a huge civics lesson for the entire country.
And we desperately need it. Yeah,
we sure do. And I don't think there's a long list of things that need to be attacked. I think there's, again, the reset button, the restoration button mm-hmm. needs to be punched a few times. And I think with a few broad strokes, some cleanup and some tightening of, for example, Commerce Clause,
right.
General Welfare Clause, there are things that can happen that will make an immediate huge impact and hopefully mm-hmm. save our children and our grandchildren from a pretty bleak economic future at a minimum.
Yeah, hopefully so. So how can people get involved?
Well, there's the main thing to do, or the best thing to do, is to go to our website, www.conventionofstates.com. And once you get there, there's an opportunity to do several things to support the effort. There's a petition that folks sign electronically, and once they do that, it'll be sent directly to their assembly house member, the assembly senate member.
Mm-hmm.
There's opportunities to volunteer, to raise your hand and say, look, I'm willing to go beyond that. If folks do that, then they'll get contacted by me and others on the Convention of States team here in PA
mm-hmm.
and be told, you know, here's what you can do to help us out even more. My hope is that we'll have resolutions filed in both chambers sometime over the next month or two, you know, early in
mm-hmm.
this current session.
Okay. Yeah.
There'll be hearings. There'll be a need for folks to send an email or perhaps leave a voicemail for their elected officials to help us move this thing along. So.
Okay.
We do have a primary sponsor on the House side. I expect that the resolution will be filed in the House around the end of January. I'm still looking for a primary sponsor in the Senate, but hope to have one soon.
Okay, fantastic. So it's conventionofstates.com.
Correct, conventionofstates.com.
Okay, so I encourage folks to go there to conventionofstates.com and see what they can do to help get this moving along here in Pennsylvania. And if knowing folks outside of Pennsylvania, contact them too, because it's not just a Pennsylvania issue, it's a nationwide issue. So conventionofstates.com to get involved. And Steve, thanks so much for taking time to explain this, because it's really can be confusing. I mean, you helped clarify a whole bunch of stuff for me and how this whole process works and addressing some of the concerns out there that I've heard about. So I appreciate the time that you've taken to be with us, and you take care.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Yep.
I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.